It's time to get nerdy, y'all.
A little bit of gaming history for you.
Something relevant in gaming and discuss our opinions on it.
Should we kick it out of here or should we kickstart it?
This is the part where you, the listeners, try to stump the hosts.
I'm not a lawyer. I just play one on a podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it's Tuesday, May 25th, 2021, and you know what that means. It's time to get nerdy, y'all. Welcome to episode number 190 of Two Nerds in a Pod, the nerdiest video game podcast in the galaxy. As always, shout out to our forever sponsor, or current forever sponsor, Game Insider Mag, for supporting this episode, and shout out to my comrade in gaming commentary, Maxion, who is here with me.
Oh,
Mac, how are you, man?
I am great, dude. It was such a fantastic week, especially the weekend. I had a delightful time, but I'm afraid that I can't in good conscience start, because then I don't think you could follow it up. So I think I need to give first billing here to your last week, so that then I can really come in and not you know, interrupt your flow.
Well, you know what, dude, I don't have a ton of exciting stuff to say. The move is progressing. It gets in the way of playing video games when you have to move. I don't know if you knew that.
Mm-hmm.
What do I have going on that's exciting? Stand-up comedy clubs are starting to reopen. If you're vaccinated, you can go and you can work on your material.
Multipass.
Oh, multipass. Your vaccination card. Got it. I recorded a special a couple years ago. It did pretty well. I'm excited to get a new hour. Like, that's my goal over the next year, year and a half, is to get a nice new tight hour of stand-up comedy that our friends who listen to the show, that our friends who are fans of the work we do can listen to, and that I can put out there. So I'm hyped that COVID is starting to go away and that we can all get back to normal. That's it for me. Now I want to hear about you. Tell me about you and your weekend. What did you do?
So the weekend was fantastic. A friend came to visit, and then we in turn went to visit more friends in the nearby metropolis. It was altogether much too short, as everybody had to be home by specific points of time. So really, it was a good time. You know, we got together, we hung out, we played games, like card games together, and just like being in the same room with friends was so much fun. Now, everybody that I hung out with, I had hung out in the meat space with before.
Okay.
But these were friends that I primarily had in an online component. So, you know, it was just really nice. Took a trip to IKEA.
Okay.
And since Metz Girl is saying it, yes, Metz Girl is the friend that came over, and then the two of us went together to another friend's place, and then, you know, obviously we all had to be back for our lives by the time the weekend ended, so it came to an end all too quickly, but still, yeah. Gloriously fun. It's the type of fun that I have missed, dearly, and it made for a fantastic weekend.
Dude, I'm glad to hear it. Well, good. And I, like you said, I can't top that, dude. I cannot top that.
Well, let's top it by getting right into the gaming news. What do you say, my friend?
I say we do it. Welcome to episode 190, boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for tuning in, as always. What do I want to talk about first? Something that is right up Mac's alley. That's what. This is on GameInformer.com, written by Leanna Rupert. Gaming adaptations are the big craze in recent years, but what about the Portal movie that was confirmed to be in development? J.J. Abrams shed a little light on the future of the Valve take, confirming that it is still in active development at Warner Brothers, though also providing an update that he is no longer actively involved with the Half-Life adaptation that was also rumored. Here's the quote. He says he told IGN at a recent press event, "We actually do have a script that's being written for the Portal movie now at Warner Brothers. We are really excited about the take and the pitch, so it feels like the thing's finally on the rails." Mac, Portal movie, is it going to be a stud or is it going to be a dud? Oh. I want your prediction as a huge fan of Valve. are, Portal stuff.
Are those the only options? Is it really a binary choice, zero here?
We could go scale of 1 to 10. What do you, however you want to tell the people.
Oh, man. I am cautiously optimistic. As you know, we've had a lot of video game movies that haven't done well. A lot of those have been helmed by, what's his name, Yul Bol, I believe is the name of the filmmaker. Almost all of the video game movies that you think of that are like, oh man, this wasn't great, have had Yul Bol's hand in them. So as long as we keep him far away, I think we're in, you know, good luck. But the Portal / Half-Life universe just has a lot of cool stuff in it. So yeah. I could see it being fairly easy for good writing. I feel like the technology is there for us to make a reasonably good stuff, even if we have to CG some of it. I think they're capable of getting good actors, so I'm cautiously optimistic.
Yeah, I feel like Portal is a movie, or rather is a game, that would translate well to a movie, because it's not going to be so much about the story as it is going to be about the humor, right? It's going to be about the writing, and I think graphically, you know, if you're CGI in this thing, I mean, it's as simple as making a game, right? Making a movie that's in the style of the game. So I'm excited for this. I just hope that it has that same sense of humor and it's not over the top. That's my hope. So let's move on to something that's kind of video game adjacent, but I was excited when I saw this because I like to play board games. I like to dabble in stuff outside of just the controller or the mouse and keyboard based games. This comes from Polygon.com by Charlie Hall. Hit board game Catan is getting a new collector's edition featuring pieces hand sculpted by the game's creator, Klaus Tuber. Catan 3D goes up for pre-order on Tuesday, May 25th, which is today, and will cost... Let me ask you, Mac, why don't you give me a guess as to how much you think a 3D sculpted Settlers of Catan would cost?
Hand sculpted by the creator, no less.
Yeah, yeah.
Ooh, man. Do you think... I don't know if he's a good sculptor or not. Maybe he's a really bad sculptor and that, you know, everything's like some sort of weird, crazy Tim Burton-esque parody. I don't know. But I would say 250 is what
okay,
I
so
would
Ish,
guess.
Ishmobile in the chat guesses 200. Maxion guesses 250. Metzgirl guesses 500.
Are we doing Price is Right rules?
I mean, yeah, I guess so.
What's your guess?
I already know the answer, right? So my guess is going to be...
Spear of the Morrigantes says 300. I think we've got four guesses. I think
that's plenty
right
of
that. Yeah.
Plenty of guesses. And Ishmobile now, he changed it to $1. Okay. Someone said 1.000, but no currency, no symbol. Is he talking Canadian? What is he talking there? I don't know.
Rolf is certainly going probably US dollars since... You know, the rest of us were talking U.S. dollars, but I don't know, could be 1,000 euros.
So if we're going with the winner, assuming that there was no Googling, it was actually Spiero, guessed $300, and that is the price. It says Catan will include hand-painted 3D terrain tiles, including C-frames and harbor markers, as well as antiqued player pieces. Mac, I'm not even going to get into, like, is this worth it or not, because you know what I've realized about this type of stuff? It's worth it if someone's willing to pay for it, right? That's just how the market works. That's basic economics. But the concept of having classic board games be 3D printed, something you think will catch on, or is this just going to be a Catan thing?
Oh, well, there are a large amount of 3D printed stuff that's going on with respect to board games. As a matter of fact, if you fancy jumping down a little bit of a rabbit hole, go to Thingiverse sometime and look up the 3D models and such for a video game, or rather a board game. I am sure you can find stuff for HeroQuest and for HeroScape and all the other really cool games that you're always losing pieces to and could use some replacements for, or some stuff for terrain and new takes on it. But yeah, 3D printing...
I get the relevance of 3D printing. I'm not saying, like, is there the ability to 3D print games? I'm saying like the concept of people making a game that was traditionally not 3D printed and making a version that is now 3D printed, do we think that concept will catch on?
I think so, yeah. And
okay.
On Thingiverse, you can find people who have given that 3D printed treatment to games in that sense as well. And I mean, it's most common in Catan. I'm not 100% sure why, probably the popularity, because yeah, there have been people who have 3D printed Catan sets for quite some time in the hobby space. So,
and you know, you mentioned HeroScape, like that game, they don't make it anymore. And like my kids, we're just now at the point where my kids are like, Dad, whip out that game and let's play. And like us playing consists of like very loose rules.
Mm-hmm.
But many of my terrain pieces, like a lot of them, have gotten cracked because they're not that durable. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so like I will need to 3D print some more terrain for that game to be able to keep its lifespan.
Here's what we do. We print out some ones, okay. And then I'll bring in like the full rule book, and you and I will demolish those children.
Yeah, and they will be like, Dad, this is not how we used to play. It used to be so laid back, and I'll be like, Mac is here now. It's time to get serious.
Mac comes over, and suddenly it's Australian rules.
It's Australian rules, whatever that means. Next news story comes from Kotaku.com. We've talked a lot about video game crunch on the pod. This is a story from 1994, Mac. The story is from now, but he references something that happened in 1994. Luke Plunkett on Kotaku. Wide-scale reporting of terrible working conditions at video game studios is a relatively recent thing, but crunch has always been with us. And as we can see in this rare story about the practice from the 1990s, when it's bad, it can be life-threatening. Sega historian John Harrison has shared a translated version of a story from an old Japanese Mega Drive magazine from 1994 in which treasures Hiroshi Uyuchu, best known for his work on Ikaruga, Radiant Silvergun, and Gunstar Heroes, well-known game, talks about crunch as a hopeless situation and how it nearly killed him. I'm not going to read too much of this. But he says, my neglect for my own health finally caught up with me. It began at the end of last year when I collapsed in the train station. After that, in Las Vegas, I experienced a bad spell of dizziness, and then I collapsed at the office. Finally, the other day, it became so bad that I had to be taken to the hospital by ambulance. I was one step away from moving on to the next life. This is pretty morbid.
Mm-hmm.
Mac, I'll be honest. I did not realize that video game crunch was happening back in the 90s. I, quite frankly, thought that it was more of a modern-day thing. Now, does it change your perspective on crunch, knowing that it's still happening in any way? It does for me, but not in the way people might think. I want to hear your opinion.
I think you and I might share a brain on this particular thing, because, and I don't want to steal your thunder, but yes, it does change my perspective on it, but only insofar as it makes me madder that it is an even more entrenched norm than I thought.
Yeah, that's kind of what I thought. Like, it's more common than we realized. And, you know, nowadays when you hear about crunch, in your mind you're like, yeah, that's wrong. But, like, logically, at least for me, I'm kind of like, well, there's so many moving parts in games today, right? There's the voice acting. There's, you know, the physics. There's getting the engine to work. There's timing all these things perfectly. There's so many things that me, as someone who doesn't make games, doesn't even understand. And so I'm like, I understand why games are constantly getting delayed. I don't agree with the crunch, but I get why it's happening. But to look back on this and to hear that, oh, even back with like Gunstar Heroes, like Sega games, it was still happening, to me was very, very eye-opening.
Now, I will throw out there, and I'm glad to see that Galvatron has mentioned it, and it's something I was going to say, was the crunch has been with us for so long. How widespread, how pervasive it has been in the past, not 100% sure. But yeah, it's a fairly well-known story that they crunched hardcore to try and get E.T., that game that is a part of the tidy narrative of the game crash of 83, but while people claim that it is responsible, it's not an exclusive thing. It's a contributing factor, really. But that E.T. Atari game was certainly crunched hard to try and get it out the door in time for the movie's release.
Yeah, for sure. Ishimobile hit the nail on the head because that was really my unexpected thought that maybe people weren't expecting me to say. He says in the chat, you would think that after so many years, people could figure out how to manage it differently. And that's really what came to my mind is like, oh, so this isn't a new thing. It's been happening for a long time. Now, granted, back in those Sega days, 1994, it was only published about or spoken about in an old school gaming magazine, right? And we're just now hearing about it because someone translated it and put it on the internet. Nowadays, everyone has a blog. You know, everyone has a Twitter. Tweets go viral. We hear about it quickly, but it doesn't mean that and we should have figured this out as an industry. Right now, I think. That has been our news for the week.
All right. Well, now that we've seen what's going on right now, let's take a little look into the past. We call this video game history. So in this week, in years past, we've seen some pretty cool titles released. Although, let me start with something that is perhaps just a little bit of a, you know, punching down at Skyrim. Because this week, Mr. Nice Guy, I saw a meme, I think, is probably the best way to put this, although it kind of straddles that line. But I see Skyrim became as old on Monday as Morrowind was when Skyrim was released. So, you know, it's a little unwieldy there, but if there were 3,500 days between the Morrowind's release and Skyrim's release, we are now that 3,500 days since Skyrim's release. And in that time, we had, you know, the release of Skyrim, or I'm sorry, we had the release of Morrowind, followed by Oblivion, and then Skyrim. And now we've just had Skyrim released for every platform imaginable, and then some. And, yeah, so obviously a little bit tongue-in-cheek there. But I threw that out there as a buffer because, Mr. Nice Guy, I have something that I am woefully unprepared to talk about.
Ooh,
but
what is that?
I know you're prepared to talk about it, sir. And that is the 2016 release for PC of Overwatch.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, so Overwatch, phenomenal game. Overwatch was the hero shooter that we needed. We needed something from Blizzard that was a little bit different. We needed something that wasn't just another military shooter or derivative of what else was happening. Overwatch brought that, and it made it something that was fun to play for both casuals and for hardcore people. It has a strong, strong esports scene. It's still super relevant on Twitch, super relevant in the esports space, but also fun enough that you can pick up and play it and just do casual games if you're not down with getting into it really hardcore. Multiple heroes, and guess what, Mac? They made every single piece of DLC free. Now, Overwatch was a big part of the loot box conversation because there's a lot of really cool skins that you can get. It's just a matter of either playing the game a lot or buying those loot boxes. Overwatch 2 has since been announced, and we should see that in a year or two. But Overwatch, still very relevant. One of the better games ever made by Blizzard, in my opinion. Love it.
Yeah. And I don't know what the current theme or even... Yeah, I know that you've tried... That you tried especially because I went back and listened to a lot of the earlier episodes of Two Nerds in a Pod not that long ago. And in between cringing at my own voice and the terrible audio quality I was putting out in those times and our technique that has certainly improved over the last 190 episodes, I was also amused by how frequently you were like, Mac, you gotta get on Overwatch. We can play together. It'll be great.
But you know what? So here's the thing. I've realized that's not a Mac game. Like, back in the day when we would record the pod, I'd be like, I like this game. And it's online, and it's not just, like, shooting guns. I think Mac would like this game. I've since learned, not necessarily your thing.
I would never be upset for you trying to get me to like the things that you like. Because, after all, it's only not a Mac game so long as Mac doesn't try it. Nonetheless, Overwatch, fantastic. I think we can solidly say, I think you summed it up best, that it was the hero shooter we needed. Now we move a little bit farther back in time to 1993, a game released for the Nintendo Entertainment System that you probably have never played. I don't know, maybe you have, Mr. Nice Guy. It's called Mr. Gimmick. Sound familiar?
No, it does not. I'm excited to hear about it.
All right, so Mr. Gimmick released late in the NES lifespan. As such, it was never released in the US. Only in Japan and in Europe. I think Nintendo of America wasn't entirely convinced that it would do well since they had been pushing the Super Nintendo since its release in 91. Also notable, the last game released for the NES was in 94. So when I say near end of the console's lifespan, we're getting pretty close to the wire there. So, but it's a legit game. Now, the general story is that you, as Mr. Gimmick, are like a stuffed animal, a toy. You're some kind of toy, right? That is brought home and given to this little girl. And the rest of the toys get jealous in a way somewhat reminiscent of Toy Story, of the first Toy Story. However, it gets a little dark because the other toys kidnap the child and like take the child into essentially like Neverland or whatever, and you as Mr. Gimmick go to save your owner. Now what was really cool about it is that you would fight with this like star power up that you would charge and throw as a kind of projectile, but you could also ride on it. So, like, it had lots of slopes and slants and a lot of really interesting and fun physics mechanics, especially for the NES. So, Mr. Gimmick is... like I said, I don't know if you would have an easier... Well, you'd probably have a rough time getting your hands on the cartridge. But the ROM is easy enough to get your hands on. And if you haven't tried it... give it a shot. It's worth playing through. Fair warning, though, that there is a secret area in every single level of the game. And in order to get the good ending, because that was a thing, definitely a thing back in the NES days, you need to collect all of those secret items in order to get the good ending and such. But anyway, just a little bit of history for you. But Overwatch... worth playing. Skyrim, jury's still out. It may or may not be available on the platform that you want. And Mr. Gimmick, definitely worth giving a go.
Nice. What's everyone's favorite NES game in the chat right now? I would love to hear it.
Mega Man 2.
So I don't know what my favorite is. I'd probably go Mario 3. But one that you and I have talked about that I feel was vastly underplayed because it is so hard to find.
Little Samson,
dude. That game, if you have access to play ROMs, you have got to try Little Samson. That game is platforming goodness.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Mac, thanks for that gaming history. Let's move on to our topic of the week, where we talk about something relevant in gaming and give our opinions on it. Mac, we're going to revisit a topic that we have talked about before, that you have had opinions on before, and I have had opinions on before, but this is different because this time it involves Valve, who we all know and love. This is on Ars Technica, and the title is Valve is making a Switch-like portable gaming PC. Yes, indeed. It's going to be called the Steam Pal. Multiple sources familiar with the matter. By the way, this story is written by Sam Makiovec. Multiple sources familiar with the matter have confirmed that the hardware has been in development for some time, and this week Valve itself pointed to the device by slipping new hardware-related code into the latest version of Steam, the company's popular PC gaming storefront and ecosystem. It goes on to say, the device is very likely the subject of an announcement Valve co-founder Gabe Newell hinted at in a panel conversation at a New Zealand school earlier this month. You may remember we talked about this a week or two ago on the show. There, he dodged a question about Valve's plans for future console video games with an indirect answer. You will get a better idea of that by the end of the year, and it won't be the answer you expect. You'll say, aha, now I get what he was talking about. So you may remember someone had asked him if Valve games would be able to come to Nintendo Switch, I believe was the question, and he said, wait till the end of the year, we'll have a better answer. This may be that better answer. Mac, it goes on to say, you know, it talks about the history of gaming PCs that are handheld, with Alienware putting one out a little while back that was at CES, and many others starting to put them out via Indiegogo and Kickstarter. You've kind of been against this in the past, but does it change your perspective knowing that this is coming from Valve.
Okay, so we have seen from the index that Valve, when they decide to, can put out a fantastic piece of hardware. So I think if there were hesitancies on account of, I don't know, they've never done hardware before, you know, you can look at the index and be like, maybe they can hack it. So, I mean, I don't know if anything has really changed in my posture. I'm cautiously optimistic. I suspect Steam will likely, or Valve will likely be able to put out something that works well with their current product of Steam, the platform. So I think it'll probably be great. I think the price point and the capabilities are going to be a big question for me, but I can think of a lot of games that I have in my Steam library that would be fun to play on the go.
So give me some example of some of those games, because in my mind, it doesn't make sense to play Chasm, or rather, let me rephrase that. It doesn't make sense to buy a handheld PC for the purpose of playing a game like Chasm.
Sure. I don't think it's something that I am so dying to play my games on the go that I would buy it just for one or two games. But
yeah, yeah.
I'm just saying I've already got a lot of the software that I would enjoy playing on the go, that if the price is right, that I would certainly go for it.
Okay, understood. And that's my thing too. And I'd love to get perspective because I know a lot of our listenership, our viewership is into PC gaming, as am I. To me, like, I want to sit down at my PC and I want to play with a mouse and keyboard, right?
Mm-hmm.
There are PC games that I'd play on the go. But once again, we always have this discussion, Mac, of console versus PC. And one of the arguments that PC people make is, well, you get more precision, you get more customization, you can constantly upgrade it, and it's more powerful, right? And to me, a handheld PC takes away all of those options.
Agreed.
They're not 100%. They're not upgradable. You don't have mouse and keyboard peripherals, right? The screen is smaller and the customization is not there. So I guess I'm curious who this appeals to, like what market segment is really like, oh, I've got to be able to play GTA 5. I've got to be able to play, you know, Cyberpunk 2077 on the go. I just don't get it.
I think if you're in a situation, let's just throw it out there, that you had to be away from your main PC a lot, like for swaths of time. Maybe you have to travel a lot for business or something like that.
Okay, sure.
It would probably be pretty nice to have a, you know, to have a smaller form, you know, PC that you could break out at the hotel room or what have you, get some gaming in. If you're not very big into the, I don't know, pub crawl scene. I don't know. I don't think it's for me, but I think it could be, especially if I could pick it up. And lately I've been playing a lot of stuff on my Game Boy Advance.
Okay, nice.
So I feel like I am ready for for another handheld, just because I've been playing on handheld a lot lately.
So let me ask you this, and this is something like I really value your opinion and everyone else's. We're going to read some of your comments in the chat. What do you all think, and Maxion, what do you think of the possibility of Valve making exclusives that can only be played on this PC? And before you tell me that that's a crazy idea, chat, consider the fact that Valve literally made a $1,000 piece of hardware in the Valve Index that is the only way you can play Half-Life Alyx, which is a fantastic game that is one of their flagship franchises. What do you think is the possibility, Mac, of them putting out games and saying, hey, you can only play this not on our PCs, but on our handheld PC?
So, yeah, there is at least some precedent. You're right. Of course you're right. You come here spitting straight facts, Mr. Nice Guy. I mean, I think it's possible. However, it is a much easier pill to swallow that you have to have, you know, the index to play, or that you have to have the VR setup to play Alyx because it's designed for VR. I think it would be much more difficult to pitch that you would have to play it on the handheld because it's designed for handheld. I suppose it's possible, but I just don't. I don't know if that's a circumstance that would carry the day.
The chat seems to agree with you. We are going to read your comments. Let me just say quickly why I think it is possible. The whole concept of handheld gaming is phenomenal, but everyone has basically been trying to compete with Nintendo in the handheld space for a really, really long time. And I don't feel like anyone has ever done it as well as Nintendo has. Think original Game Boy, think Game Boy Advance, think Nintendo DS. Think 3DS, you know, like Nintendo has always killed it. You know, we've had the Game Gear, we've had the PSP. None of them have ever really held up to Nintendo. And so for Valve to put out a PC that does mobile gaming, right, on the go, they have to make sure that there isn't too much overlap between what Nintendo is already doing on the Switch, right? And so if it's like, oh, this is great, you can play Hollow Knight, you know, you can play Shovel Knight, you can play Minecraft. It's like, all right, that's all fine and good. You know, you can play Among Us, but you can do all those things on the Switch as well. And the Switch proved that graphics are not what's important. It's just about having fun.
Let's see. Ishmobile says, I could see them developing one, you know, a game designed for mobile, but also possible elsewhere. Rolf says, thinks it's possibly, it's highly unlikely. Spear says, I feel that would be possible, but would be a huge negative point for them.
Well, fantastic conversation. I'm excited to see what Valve comes up with. Like, I really hope that they come up with something that is just unique and that is something I say, oh, I want that, and it's not cost prohibitive. And that has been our topic of the week.
All right, well, now we turn to a project that's trying to get off of the ground. We call this Kick or Kickstart. I have posted a link in the chat that you all can join us in looking at. I'm going to get the name right, but I think it's Aguna, Scourge of the Goblin King. And at a glance, you will know one of the reasons why I like the looks of this. It is a brand new action-adventure game for the Nintendo Entertainment System. They were looking for $6,500 in order to bring this project to life, which they have soundly defeated that goal. The purpose of the Kickstarter is primarily to fund and make sure that they have what they need, their minimum necessary, in order to have a run of cartridges, of physical cartridges. If you're just interested in the game itself, you can, $10 is the minimum buy-in, and that gives you the ROM and the PDF of the manual to be delivered November of 2021. If you fancy a physical cartridge to plug into your Nintendo, if you've still got one, the cartridge-only version, although it's cartridge and ROM, but $50 to get the cartridge, plus the digital ROM, plus the stuff. As stuff goes up, there's a complete in-box edition, so if you fancy something kind of like what the old experiences were of having the box, maybe some other things, you can go in for one of those. Now, there was a limited edition that they were only doing 115 copies of with an alternative, you know, box and design and such. Those have already all sold out, so you're limited to those three tiers, basically. 10 for the ROM, 50 for the cartridge, 60 for the cartridge, plus the whole, complete in-box style thing going on. This has the feel of a, I guess we could call it a Zelda-like, wouldn't you say, Mr. Nice Guy?
I would. It really, really has that feel, 100%.
Yep. Keys, items, leveling, experience, you know, yeah. And there's also...
Dungeons.
Yes. There's the dungeons, there's the overworld, the upgrades, and the like. And it looks pretty nice what they are presenting here on Kickstarter. I have some thoughts, but Mr. Nice Guy, I'd love to hear your take.
This is the type of stuff that gives me warm fuzzies, man. And I'm not a warm fuzzy type of person. But like, this
no,
is great.
Can confirm he's a cold, prickly type of person.
I'm a cold, prickly old man. This looks really good. I like that they're actually doing the physical cartridge, because there's enough of this stuff online where people have just like made a ROM and put it out for free. So I feel like in order for this to really be value, it's some, or to feel like it's giving us some type of value, it has to have that physical aspect, and they do. I don't feel like this is something that we don't have a lot of. Like, it's not the most original idea, but I think that the price point is realistic. Like, $50 for an NES game, totally get it. And if you watch the video and you're really into this, I would say support this. I think this looks great.
Yeah, I agree. If you like what you see, go ahead, support it. Get in it, whichever those tiers you like. Now, for me personally, though, I've got a rule, Mr. Nice Guy.
And what is it?
As much as I may like what I see, my rule is simple. Prove to me that you can put all of this stuff together by coming with a playable demo before you start asking for money. And unless I very much have misunderstood the game itself, I don't believe that they are offering a playable demo. So I, of course, am welcome to change my tune if it turns out that somebody, that I just overlooked it. But from what I saw and what I read, they don't have a demo to be seen. And yeah, I'm going to have to say kick. I am very much outvoted. Everybody else feels Kickstarter-y in the chat, and of course you, Mr. Nice Guy, as well. But I will be the lone bastion. I will die upon this hill. Oh no, Ishmobile, you're with me. Yes.
Let me ask you a question, because yeah. I feel like that's a rule you have, but I feel like there has to be some like exception to the rule, right?
Yeah, I'll usually carve out an exception. Lacking a playable demo, I will sometimes bend on that if there is like, if they've done like the game before, like if it's a sequel to
okay,
a game
yep.
that they already did, then I'll go for that. So
let me ask you this. Like, what if, because consider the fact that you're putting out an NES game,
mm-hmm.
and let's say it's 10 hours of gameplay or 12 hours of gameplay.
Okay.
And you don't want to, you know, give up 30 minutes of that, you know, pre-release, you know, maybe that's what they're going for. Also, consider the fact that the release date on this is November 2021.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if they were a year and a half out, I'd be like, yeah, come on, you've gotta have a demo. Like, show me that you have something. But where they're only, you know, less than 6 months out, I almost want to give them a pass on not having a demo. You know what I mean?
I feel, because
that's not that far away.
I kind of feel the opposite. I feel like if you are truly only 6 months out, you should be able, even more so, to put a demo out there.
But okay, and this is the last pushback I'll give. Consider the fact that it was a active choice. I think you're kind of coming from the perspective that, oh, they don't even have a demo ready? And like, maybe they do have a lot ready, but they're just saying, no, we want you to enjoy this when it comes out in its entirety. It's kind of like, I'll give you an example with my comedy special, or with a lot of comedians' comedy. It's best viewed as a whole piece.
Indeed,
right?
Indeed. The first option is a fantastic comedy special that should
stop
be viewed
it,
as the whole
it,
piece.
Stop.
And while there are like snippets and clips of certain jokes that are like funny, I think probably one of my favorites is I already bought it. But nonetheless, yeah you're right.
Right.
The jokes build on each other. It's a
exactly.
it's a process. And I hear what you're saying for the artistic thing. But it is worth pointing out, right, that one of the things that the playable demo does is it gives you more of an idea than just looking at it. It gives you the opportunity to heckle the comedian, as it were. And I think the playable demo of Heckled Mr. Nice Guy, that we arguably have every time that we do this show and people heckle you inside of the chat, is still worth having in spite of the comedy special being a single contained experience.
Fair, fair. All right, so we'll agree to disagree. I think this should be kickstarted, but I understand where you're coming from.
While we don't agree on this one, I think we can both agree that we hope these people the best of luck and that this game is a success. We hope it gets all the success that it so greatly deserves. And that's been Kicker Kickstart.
Awesome. It is time for Nerdflex.
Woo!
a segment where you, the viewer, try to stump the host. Lately, you've been okay at it. If you're here live, you have a job to do. Get your multiple choice gaming questions into the chat if you would like, and we will try to answer them. In the meantime, we do have a test bank of questions as a backup.
Mm-hmm. I should note that the test bank of questions comes from actually several different, believe it or not, video game trivia books. So, we've compiled that into a thing. It's got on cards, flashcards, and the like.
And we do not know the answers in advance. So let's start with a Zelda question from the test bank while we wait for people to potentially get questions in the chat. Before Link learns it from him, and I have no idea what the answer is. Before Link learns it from him, who teaches Guru Guru the Song of Storms?
Ha! I know the answer to
before
this one.
Before Link, do you really?
Yeah.
Okay, I won't read it again. What is the answer?
So the Song of Storms, you get inside of the windmill in Ocarina of Time, and you learn it from him because he's complaining about a kid coming in there and playing a song and ruining everything. So you teach it to the dude by going back in time and playing it for him and screwing up the windmill so that you can get inside the dungeon below. So, it's a time loop situation.
I don't know how you remember all this stuff, man. I don't know.
Like, silly facts about video games? Yeah, I'll remember them. Try asking me, you know, the structure of glucose anymore, and boom, it's gone. It's a wonder I passed it on an exam the first time.
So once again, what was the answer to the question?
Link teaches it to him so that Link in turn learns it from him.
Got it. Okay, and in the answer it says, Adult Link! Exclamation point. Paradoxical! Exclamation point.
It's a paradox.
So you got that right. Cool. Let's keep things moving. We're going to stick to the trivia test bank. Mac is one for one. And since I'm on his team, we are collectively one for one.
Mm-hmm.
Sega. What Mega Drive game has enemies Psycrow, Evil the Cat, and Queen Slug for a butt?
Wow. Gosh.
I'm thinking of just, like, Mega Drive games. It makes it sound like it should be an exclusive. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
I
mean, Psycrow almost made me think Earthbound, but Earthbound's, like, that's an SNES.
Yeah.
I mean, my brain said something really weird, like Felix the Cat or something. You know what? Toe Jam and Earl.
That's what I thought, too! I thought Toe Jam and Earl, because that had wacky characters like that.
Yeah, right? Or, either Toe Jam and Earl or Earthworm Jim. Both had, like, wacky characters.
Right. But here's the thing. Earthworm Jim was also on SNES.
Very true.
And I almost feel like Toe Jam and Earl might have been, too. But Toe Jam and Earl was my first instinct when I heard this.
You know what? We should trust our instincts.
But yeah, let's try Toe Jam and Earl final answer. Oh my gosh, you're going to laugh so hard. It was Earthworm Jim.
I was promised laughter. All I have in my heart right now is rage at listening to you.
Earthworm Jim is not only on Mega Drive, though. I mean, that to me, that's not a fair question. Because yes, it's a Mega Drive game, but it's also an SNES game.
Stolen from me.
Should we go with the multiple choice one?
So, Spear of the Morgantes asks, in the Dragon Age universe, which of these words in Qurani is used for black powder? Is it A, Ben Hasserath, B, Galactok, C, Tal Vashtoth, D, Vitar, or E, Arishak? I know none of these. I've not played any of the games in the Dragon Age series. So I think black powder, I feel like it's got to be something that has like a little bit of a plosive sound to it. And of those, I feel like Glatlock sounds the most like explosive. So I would guess B, Gatlock.
Yeah, E was my first instinct. But I'm going to go with you because I messed up Earthworm Jim on the last question.
It turns out this is going to be shoe on the other foot. We are going with B, Gatlock.
Final
sounds,
answer.
Sounds Klingon-y. Gatlock. How do you like your Gatlock cooked? And being somebody who loves Star Trek, that's a compliment, not the slight.
I miss Dragon Age. That was one of the first RPGs that I played when I got my Xbox 360. It's freaking fun.
It is Gatlock, a black, non-magical explosive powder unique to the Kwani, or Kwanari. It's not as powerful as magic, but can be used by anyone. There is no literal translation. The word derives from death, earth, and glory. So, yes, what does Gatlock mean in Klingon? We have the translation right there. Glory. That's what it means in Klingon. Right there, provided to us. Thank you for a splendid question. 2 out of 3, 2.5 out of 3, I think. Yeah. But nonetheless, a good time was had by all, especially us, who feel like our nerdy muscles have been flexed. And don't forget, if you want to flex your nerdy muscles, there are still sound tests out there available that come with prizes. You know what to do.
Cool. And that has been Nerdflex.
Well, now we turn to a little bit of legalese.
Legalese.
I'm not a lawyer. I just play one on a podcast. And last time, I promised that we were going to have a legalese for the last one and the following 5 to be all dedicated to a sort of general through line. And last time we discussed the legal and to some extent the emotional underpinnings of video games and how they're not just a pastime but works of art. This was all because a state government in the US tried to place restrictions on how games were sold to people and, quote, like the protected books, plays, and movies that preceded them, video games communicate ideas through features distinctive to the medium, and that suffices to confer First Amendment protection. That's a quote from the 2011 Brown v. Entertainment Merchants Association. However, that was just the opening salvo to the greater idea here, which is that the conflicting interests of developers, publishers, and gamers have far-reaching implications for how games are experienced, delivered as well as preserved and lost. Mr. Nice Guy.
Yeah.
This is going to be fairly dry. I warn
That's
you.
Cool, dude.
But
I got some water. I'm ready to go.
Excellent.
I'm good.
Excellent. But I've got a question for you.
Yeah.
I think it's important for us going forward to know exactly who we're dealing with. And in general, I've described the groups as developers, publishers, and gamers.
Okay.
Just shot in the dark, Mr. Nice Guy. I know we oftentimes share similar lines of thinking.
Okay.
But if you had to define a developer, a publisher, and a gamer, how would you define them?
Gamer is simple. Gamers are people who play games.
That's
right?
You and me, yeah.
Developers, also simple in my mind, people who make games. Mm-hmm. And I would say publishers are people who produce games. So, like, sometimes you'll see that someone on a TV show gets a credit as an executive producer. For example, Rockstar did not make... Oh, what was that old spy game? I can't remember the name right now. They didn't make that game, but they did publish it. So their name went on it, and it just kind of made it more reputable that they were the ones who were backing it. Mm-hmm. So the publisher is someone who is backing the game made by the developer.
Dude, we are so on the same thing. I do have a slight addition to the definition of publisher, in that publishers often are either control the distribution or the platform. And whether that's because, like you said, they're the ones backing the game, they're the ones putting it out there, but the publishers are often part of the platform, conversation as well. So we're going to discuss specifically the gamer side and such more next time around. But in the interest of being both accurate and fair here, there is overlap between the groups, right? There are things like, we know that there are first-party developers, right? So, which are owned by, the publisher themselves. Like, for example, Microsoft now owns ZeniMax, and therefore they own id Software, Arkane Studios, Machine Games, and Bethesda Softworks. And as of March this year, and that means that Doom, Quake, Dishonored, Wolfenstein, Elder Scrolls, and so on, these are all games published by first-party developers. And any game built by these developers are going to be essentially wholly owned by the publisher. There are third-party developers. There are second-party developers as well. And even with this idea of where the cut is with respect to developers, publishers and gamers, most game developers, including indie developers, tend to sign contracts with publishers in order to get their games to you and I. Kind of like you were saying, Mr. Nice Guy, about that game, that old spy game.
L.A. Noire. I looked it up.
L.A. Noire. Oh, thank you. And with these contracts often come conditions. Now, in the current ongoing Apple v. Epic lawsuit, there has been some light shed on some of the behind-the-scenes stuff that happens between these groups. And there are some various, you know, rabbit holes that we could go on, down to, and I hope I could get to those some other time. But I want to just give a really good encapsulation, because in 2020, there was a GDC presentation by Kellen Voyer. He's an actual lawyer, y'all, and a video game lawyer to boot, who presented a thing on fair video game publishing agreements. And I'm going to crib some of his insights to help here. But he said that in general, there are 7 key things that a game developer, indie or what have you, agrees when they sign on with a publisher. And some of the items that he expressed were kind of a shock to me. But some of them, you know, very much made sense. And so, Mr. Nice Guy, I'm gonna give a quick rundown of the 7, and you tell me if you would have expected it. Okay.
Okay.
So one of the common components is the advance, or the monetary advance, where the publisher is like, hey, we're going to front you money to develop the game. What did you think?
I would have expected that, absolutely.
Yeah, would have expected that, right? Yeah. That seems pretty good.
Yeah.
The second one is the revenue split, which is when and how much and who gets which money first from sales.
I would have absolutely, expected that. Yeah.
Especially with if they're giving you an advance, you would expect, oh, maybe the split's different before the advance is paid back versus after.
Yep.
And things
yep.
like that. IP ownership. Would you have expected that the publisher would ask a indie developer to sign over the ownership of the intellectual property?
I would. And the only reason why is because Microsoft was publishing Halo. And Bungie lost Halo after the 10-year contract was up that they were developing it. Now, they learned from that with Destiny and their relationship with Activision. They signed a contract when they started that relationship that stated they would own Destiny as an IP if the relationship ever ended. So that's the only reason that I would have expected that.
It is surprisingly and unfortunately common, very unfortunately common, but yeah. How about sequels? Often it is separately considered whether or not there's a right or an option for the publisher to get cracks at sequels in your IP.
I don't know if I would have expected that. That's a tough one.
It was a bit of a surprise to me. One that I certainly expected, the duration of the agreement. You were just saying that 10-year term of the contract.
Yeah.
About 40% of the contracts that Kellen Voyer had access to included some things around the neighborhood of perpetual terms.
Wow.
Which is terrifying. I'm not going to go into this one too much, but audit right, that's, you know, we can't, don't have the time to go into that. But what about pricing, specifically the not just the pricing, but when and how long you have to wait before you can do a discount on the game price?
Wow, I would not have expected that.
Right? So without drilling further down on these 7 items, these are all areas where a developer might have to relinquish their ability to control the game that they created. Have you ever wondered why a bestseller of a game had a studio behind it that failed? Maybe the revenue split wasn't enough to keep them afloat.
Interesting.
Why doesn't Skies of Arcadia, for example, have a sequel? Maybe the terms of contract were such that the sequel goes to Sega and Sega says no. Now, I offer that one tongue-in-cheek because I know that that's the reason, because the people behind Skies of Arcadia said that that's the reason why there's not a Skies of Arcadia sequel. But obviously, even attempting to drill down and add extra categories and such, there are huge generalizations that I've had to make here, and plenty of edge cases where these statements fall apart. Mobile games, especially freemium titles, have kind of play by these completely different rules. But in general, there's a lot more stuff going on behind the scenes, and it's a little bit more complicated, especially from a contractual and legal aspect. But I wanted to display that what we're getting at here is that publishers may want one thing, whereas developers want another thing. And there is often some kind of, give and take, some kind of sacrifice that the developers, the people who made the game, are giving to the publishers, and that has implications, and that might count out things in the future and put, you know, intellectual property of video games that you know and love in a weird limbo situation because the person who made it might not be the one in control of it anymore. That's all the time I have for Legalese today, but don't forget, next week we're coming back with some good stuff. You won't want to miss Legalese next time.
Awesome. Dude, that wasn't dry at all. I found that very interesting, and the chat seems to be into it too. Let's end up, or rather wrap up, our show with our last segment that we always do called What We've Been Watching and What We've Been Playing, where we talk about just that, the cool nerdy stuff we've been into across all platforms, across all media streaming services, and the internet. If you're here live, you have a job to do. Let us know the cool nerdy stuff that you have been into. Mac, packing makes it hard to get into stuff. I've had a little bit of free time, but I want to hear what you've been into this past week.
Well, I've been playing more Aria of Sorrow on my handheld, and playing a little bit of Chasm. There's daily and weekly challenges that I keep turning out for. As for watching, though, I've been watching a little bit of Kim's Convenience, some Stargate, as well as a couple old movies, some old 2000s movies. And a little bit of the earlier MCU stuff. I mentioned last time that I'd been watching Thor. I think Thor 2 and the like. Not necessarily in preparation for Loki, but it's an added
bonus. Yeah.
But yeah, that's me.
Cool. I've had no time to play games. The only new game that I have played was one of the PS Plus titles from this month, which is Battlefield 5, because I never played that when it came out. I played a little bit. It's Battlefield. It's hard for me to get excited for a new Battlefield because I feel like they're all the same. Say what you will about Call of Duty. They go back to World War II, then they go to the future. They bounce back and forth, keeps it fresh a little bit, in my opinion. As far as what I have been watching, lots of NBA playoffs, y'all. I know it's not nerdy, but it's that time of year where for the first weekend, they have 4 games each day, and it's a phenomenal, phenomenal thing. I did smoke some ribs, Mac. Ate them while watching basketball, and that's one of the things I did this weekend. But I want to know what the chat is into. What is the chat into as far as their nerdy stuff this week? Y'all are a little quiet this week.
Well, so we've got we've obviously got some Dungeons & Dragons and GURPS, of course, as usual.
Oh my.
Let's see. We've got Metzgirl watching Gravity Falls, Back to the Future, Contact, and The Parent Trap. We've got Rolf watching PDXCon Remixed. And A.R. Wilson's is watching sports shows, YouTube videos, and live streams. Galvatron watched Army of the Dead, and as well as Rayla and the Last Dragon.
So, I gotta know, Galvatron, did you pay the extra money to watch that? Do you have kids, Galvatron? I didn't know you had kids. Or are you just really into animated stuff? Because, Mac, if you didn't know, Disney does this thing where they swindle us. Mm-hmm. I like Disney. But they give us Disney Plus, right? We pay for Disney Plus, and then when their new movies come out, they're like, if you pay an extra $20 or $30, you can watch this movie before everybody else. And it's kind of absurd.
So how many of them have you paid extra money for?
I think every single one.
Absurd.
Absurd! I know, but listen, my kids, I have a soft spot. They're like, Daddy, Raya and the Last Dragon just came out. We've been in the house for a year. And I'm like, okay.
Really? I thought you would have said something like, I already bought it!
That only applies to video games. As far as what people are playing, let's see what we got here. We got Galvatron playing Resident Evil Village, Power Wash Simulator. Is that a real thing? Soul Calibur 5, or rather Soul Calibur 6, and Final Fantasy 10. He does not have children. He's court ordered, not the appropriate. Okay. I'm not even going to read his comments anymore. Love you to death, Galvatron. And what people aren't really saying what they're playing. Ishmael Wolf playing GURPS. Metzgirl's playing GURPS. Mario Odyssey and Stardew. And I think that's it, Mac. Why don't you take us home, my friend?
Oh, I missed Spear, who's reading The High Republic, and also watched Shadow and Bone.
Ooh, can I mention that since we're talking about reading, that my Invincible Compendium 1 is finally getting here on Friday. And I ordered it like a month ago. It's been out of stock on Amazon, but it's finally going to get here. I'm so excited to read it.
Nice, nice. And also playing Mass Effect Legendary Edition. Sorry, we missed that one. Anyway, but yeah, that has been our show. Thanks, everybody, for coming around and being a part of it here with us, episode 190. Y'all are the best. You're the best viewers on Twitch. You're the best listeners on podcast platforms everywhere. And all around, you're just the best people to be a part of the show. Be excellent to each other, and party on. We'll see you next time. Same bat rhyme, same bat time, same bat stuff. Keep it nerdy. Bye.
See ya.